last time we started looking at the page which is in the back of the packet, which is the actual page of the Gemara, and just to review what we noted. So I'm going to remind us of the case that the Mishnah shares with us, and also just remember that in addition to following all the little notations and the footnotes that the Gemara gives us, the stars which send us to the Mesoras Hashas, which on this page is in the left column, and the circle which sends us to the Torah Or, which is in this little column over here. Torah Or tells us where the biblical quotation is, and the little Aleph, which was at the very beginning, which sends us to the Ein Mishpat Nir Mitzvah. I'm pointing all these things out, so if you want to look up, if you know where this is on your page, that's great. But it sends us to the Ein Mishpat Nir Mitzvah and tells us where this discussion in the Mishnah appears in Maimonides, in the Rambam, or sometimes it references the Shulchan Aruch, the great code of Jewish law. So we saw all that, and in addition to following those footnotes, we noted how to find some of the punctuation marks that the Gemara or the Mishnah presents to us through certain code words. Okay, for example, when there's a quote, and when, remember what word usually introduces a quote? There's an easy way to find it. A quote meaning like of a pasuk, I mean.
Okay? It's a duplicate word.
But no, we're going to get to duplicate in a second. But so look where the circle is.
It's like Omer.
Right, Omer. So in this case, it's Shene Emar. Shene Emar means as it is, as it says, or as it is written. It doesn't literally mean as it's written, but as it says, meaning as it says in a pasuk. So that's one example. Howie mentioned another example is sometimes if you find a duplicated phrase, that's the Mishnah's way of showing that either there's a different way to punctuate it, or I'm going to address what I just said. And we're going to see that a lot in the Gemara as well, because the Gemara often makes reference to the Mishnah. So when you see a phrase that you've already seen in the Mishnah, you get a sense that, oh, the Gemara is talking about that. The Gemara is referring to that. And the only thing that you have to bear in mind when it comes to the repetition is that the repetition of a phrase could be 5, 6, 7, 10 words. It could be 2 words. And in some cases, it can even just be 1 word. And it's that awareness which is what helps us punctuate. Sometimes it's helpful when you're going through a passage of the Gemara to try to see if you could punctuate it first. If you could punctuate it first, or at least know where the pauses are, which words run into phrases together, then you could work backwards and then try to make sense of the flow of the Gemara. Okay, so I'm going to review the Mishnah now. And in doing so, I'm going to introduce one component that we didn't do last time, and that is the use of Rashi. Okay, so the first week, I gave you a code breaker for Rashi. Okay, I see Phil has it. Phil, if you could turn to that page for a second, just hold it up. And by the way, if you go to yutorah.org and look for these classes, I also put the booklet there. So in the case that you lost it, you can download it, and there you have it. So on this page, I'll just hold it up for a second, you'll see that there are about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 asterisks indicating it's not in this booklet. So it's not here. But 8 asterisks indicating that there are 8 letters in Rashi script which are fundamentally different than the kind of script that we're all familiar with. But for the most part, it's just a slightly different font. So when you think of it that way, it's relatively easy to read Rashi, with the exception of those 8 letters, which just require a little bit of study and review in order to get them. Okay, so with Rashi in this particular case, if you look at the Rashi, and remember, in a page of Gemara, when you have it open, when you have the 2 pages open, so Rashi is always on the inside column. Since we only have 1 page copied here, Rashi is on the left side. Which in the actual Gemara would be the inside column, because this would be the right side of the spread Gemara. So if you look in the Rashi, you'll see that there are 2 phrases which are in bold and regular font. You see what I'm saying? The first one is Hare Elu Edus Achas. Okay, so that's one phrase. And the next one is Shelo Tehe Sanhedrin Shomatz. Okay, so that means that what Rashi's doing is he's commenting on those phrases as they appear in the Mishnah. And what's fantastic about Rashi in the Gemara, probably a million times greater than, not to take away from his commentary on Chumash and on everything else, but what Rashi's commentary in the Gemara does is it fills in the gaps where the Gemara leaves it to us to imply an understanding. So in that sense, Rashi is essential for basic understanding of the Gemara. As a matter of fact, if you were to make your way through the Art Scroll translation of the Gemara, very often when they're filling out a Mishnah, for example, and explaining what the Mishnah is saying, they differentiate between the translation of the Talmud's words, which they put in bold, and then they explain it a lot with regular font, no bold, and usually what they're relying on is Rashi to fill in those sentences. Okay, so let's take a look and let's remember that when we get to that phrase that Rashi comments on in the Mishnah, we're going to look at Rashi. Okay? Okay, so let's take a look. Remember last time, Hayu Shnayim Roin Oso Mechalon Zeh, Ushnayim Roin Oso Mechalon Zeh. So what do we note? We noted last time that we have a repeated phrase. Okay, so what the Mishnah is telling, Hayu Shnayim. Shnayim means two. Roin means, what's Roeh? They see. Oso, him, it, the scenario. Mechalon ze, from one window. Okay, we pointed to two guys in window A. Okay, of course, there. Ushnayim roin oso mechalon ze, it's the same phrase. Two guys seeing what's going on from the other window. Okay? V'echad masrebo ba'emtza. Echad masrebo ba'emtza. One person is warning the perpetrator in the middle. Okay, we did this last time, so I'm not going through all the details of how we broke down the Mishnah. Bizman shemiktsasan. So what does bizman mean? Bizman means at the time. Shemiktsas. The root of the word miktsas is ktsas, which means small or a portion. So bizman shemiktsasan, when some of them see elu is elu, these. Hare elu edus achas. They are one group of witnesses. Okay, now that's the phrase that we saw in Rashi. How do I know to stop there? What immediately follows this is the letter vav. V means and. Now there are two kinds of and you always have to ascertain which one it is, because there's one kind of and where you don't pause, and there's another kind of and where you do pause. When do you not pause? If it's saying this and this, right? If it says, kachol v'lavan, for example, right? Kachol v'lavan means blue and white. So it's telling us, it's giving us a list. So that vav, it means and, like blue and white, but that those are going to be linked together. If you don't have something like that, typically, the vav will tell you that there's a pause there. And it's going to introduce a new idea. Idea that I presented up until now, and something else. So that vav is another hint of where there's going to be a break. So again, the phrase, Hare Elu Edus Achas. Let's take a look at Rashi. Okay, so what is the Mishnah telling us? That if somebody in group A sees somebody in group B, they become one unit of testimony. Okay, what is that? So what is left out? What is left out from what the Mishnah is telling us is the ramifications of their becoming one group. And that's what Rashi is going to tell us. Okay? V'im. What's V'im? And if. Aleph Mem means if. Okay, now you see that thing that's in parentheses now? That little base? So that's one of the footnote markers. That would send us down on the bottom left of the page to the section which is called Hagos Habach. If you remember, I had a Rebbe who called that thing in this column here, this little rod over here, he used to call it a curtain rod. I think he still does call it a curtain rod. Rabbi Drake. Okay? Calls it a curtain rod. And so in there you have Hagaos Habach, it means the insights of the Bayis Chadash. Bayis Chadash is the name of a book that he wrote. So in there, if you look down in the wide lines, the second line, you'll see that little base. And if you can read it, I know it's small, but if you can read it, he says, Rashi Dibra Maschil Hare. He's showing us where he's commenting on. And there he says, Ve'um Huzma Achas Mehem Harishona O'ashnia V'lo Huzmu. Okay, so basically what he's changing is what Rashi says. Now, that's for a little more sophisticated Gemara study. In the meantime, we're just going to stick with the way Rashi's language is, but he's just changing a little bit the way the language of Rashi is. That's what his comments usually do. He tries to point out things which are errors of an editor or errors in the way it was transmitted or in language. So he'll typically change a letter, a word, and in this case, that's what he did. So we're just going to stick with Rashi, but I just wanted to point that out.
Where does it refer to that footnote?
That little, it's the second, basically it's the second thing there.
I got it.
Okay, because it's not a word. It's a letter in parentheses. So it sends you down, you know, but that's the code breaking. That's the code breaking that we discussed in the first class, where if you see something like that, you have to be able to find it on the page. Okay, and sometimes, and by the way, there are more sophisticated Gemaras than even this one. There are some, like, I mean, just to use the art scroll as an example, even though this is not copied from the art scroll, but the art scroll has a different kind of code system in terms of how it, and it puts a lot more in the margins. For example, anytime there's a pasuk from the Torah or from a book of the Bible quoted, so the art scroll gives you the entire verse in its in the margin, so that you see you see the context of the phrase which is quoted. Because the Gemara doesn't usually quote an entire verse. It will usually quote a few words, and the recommendation is, go look it up. So what the art school does is it gives you that verse. It's still a good idea to look it up to see the greater context, but anyway. Okay, so what does he say? Ve'im huzam echad mehem. Okay, that's our phrase. Why do I stop there? Because there's a parenthesis. Okay, the parenthesis indicates that maybe there's an idea that they're trying to throw in there. So let's translate those word for word. You with me? The im and if. Huzam. So that's a word which we saw last time. If you don't remember it, that's okay. The word is from the word which means, which is zomeim. And zomeim refers to how we refer to witnesses who are false. Edim zomamim. Edim zomamim. So the im huzam. So that's a grammatical reformulation of that root, which says that if hazama, in other words, if it came to be that this that somebody in this witness group is proven to be a false witness, and how do we prove that somebody is a false witness? Remember, who remembers?
Somebody else
says
something else that he didn't see or something.
They couldn't have been there.
That they couldn't have been there. Okay, that's the idea, that they say, Imanu Yisim, you were with us. You were elsewhere, so you couldn't have been a witness there. That's the classic way of Edim Zom, Hazama coming about. So, V'im Huzam Echad Mehem. Okay, what's Echad Mehem? One of them. One of them, what does that mean? One person, one group. Okay? So, Echad means one person. Im huzam echad mehem. If only one guy becomes huzam. So what do you have? In corner A, you have Reuven and Shimon. Somebody comes along, and now Reuven and Shimon, right? There's Levi and Yehuda over there. So if what the Mishnah said that if they can see if the guys in A can see the guys in B, they become one group. Comes along another couple witnesses, and they say Reuven's a liar. Because Reuven was with us. Or they say, Reuven and Shimon are liars. They were both with us. Okay? So, that's what the parentheses are. Oshnayim. One of them becomes Huzam. One of them becomes proven to be a false witness. Oshnayim, or another one becomes proven to be a false witness. Next line. V'lo Huzmu Kulan Ein Neheragin. Okay, so now we have to try to figure out this phrase. How do you know how to break it down? Velo and not. or eno. Huzmu, that's that same word, right? Huzam. So this is what Rashi is giving us. Im huzam echad, if one or two became edim zomim, velo huzmu. You see how it's also a kind of a repeat of a phrase? Rashi used huzam. By the way, that was the box change. He says, v'im huzma achas mehen, meaning that if one group became zomim, that was the box comment. But anyway, im huzam echad mehem oshnayim, if one or two become zomim, v'lo huzmu kulam, and they did not all become zomimin, then, and so that's how you know that it's a break, because it's a comparison. Rashi says, im huzam echad mehem, v'lo huzmu kulam, if one is, and not all, ein neherogin, you don't kill any of them. Any of them. Okay, the rule of edim zomimin, of false witnesses, is you do to them what they tried to do to somebody else. But the other rule is you have to be able to disqualify all of the witnesses in order to punish them. If what happens to the witnesses is that their testimony is deemed unacceptable because their group is broken up, Reuven and Shimon, right? They're saying that we saw something. Except that what the problem is that Reuven wasn't there. Okay, so if we come along and say, Reuven, you're a liar. You were with us somewhere else. So Shimon might be telling the truth, or he might be lying. We don't know about Shimon. It doesn't matter. Once Reuven is disqualified, Shimon's testimony is thrown out. Are they Edim Zomimin? Is their group disqualified?
Yes.
So I'm not using a good word in English. Is their testimony acceptable? No. So as witnesses, they are disqualified in the sense that they don't even come into court. It's as if they were knocked out before they can come into court. Because
he said, she said.
Well, it's not so much he said, she said, as much as in order for any prosecution to go forward, you need to have two witnesses plus a warning. Reuven is disqualified. So it's as if Shimon is coming in alone. So Shimon, so it doesn't matter what Shimon says, and it doesn't matter what Reuven says, because as a group, they're no longer a group. So we can't punish them equally, and therefore we don't punish them at all. It's as if they didn't say anything, because their testimony is meaningless. Whereas if, right, exactly. Whereas if Reuven and Shimon come in, and then other people come in and say, Reuven and Shimon, you both were with us, so you're totally fabricating this, you're making it up, then we can nail them both, assuming everything else fits in. Okay, so that's what Rashi is telling us. Hare elu edus achas, they become one group of testimony. That means that, and we actually really do need the Bach here, because the Bach is pointing out that if Reuven and Shimon are here, and now somebody comes along and Yehuda and Levi are here, or at least they're claiming that they were there, and people say, Reuven and Shimon, you are with us. But Reuven and Shimon have been connected as a group to Yehuda, to Levi and Yehuda. So they're now all considered to be one group of witnesses. So if Reuven and Shimon become disqualified, okay, so the whole testimony gets thrown out and nobody gets killed because they're all considered to be one group.
Why do they combine them at all? Separate groups so that if one becomes disqualified, the whole group doesn't become disqualified.
Right. So, I mean, the situation is obviously strange because if they were able to see each other, then how could these other guys come along and say that you were with us?
Yeah.
So that raises them into suspicion. Okay. But the Gemara is just, it's just giving us the technicalities of all the scenarios. Okay, so that if these two are here and these two are here, so do they all have to give warning? Maybe they all have to give warning, but that's the case in the Mishnah, that there's one guy down below who's giving a warning that everybody hears. Maybe they affirm it, maybe they confirm it, whatever it may be. Okay, but that, again, the point of Rashi is to help us understand the ramification of they're all being edus achas, we're all being one group of witnesses. Okay, we continue in the Mishnah. V'im lav. And if they didn't see each other, hare elu shtei edios, then they are two sets of witnesses. Okay, and then the Mishnah brings us to the conclusion. Lefikach, therefore.
Sorry, where is that?
I'm now at the star on the fifth line of the Mishnah.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Lefikach. Therefore, im nimtzes achas mehen zomemes. Im nimtzes. If you find achas mehen, one group, zomemes. There's that word again. That they are
lying.
Who? The hain neherogin. What does who mean? He. Who's he? The perpetrator of the crime. The hain. And they. Who's they? Which edim? The edim zomim. Correct. The false witnesses. Neherogin. They all get killed. How do you mean they get killed? Why? Vehashinia pitura. And the second group is exempt. Now, how do I know to stop? There are two reasons. Number one, the star indicates to us that there's a quote. So since it's a quote from somewhere else, I know that whatever that I have a punctuation at that point in time. Another thing is the word pitura, usually because it means pater or exempt, it's a ruling that the Talmud gives. And after the word pitura, you're going to put a punctuation mark. And the next thing is Rabbi Yossi, which is a name. Rabbi Yossi indicates that the quote is either ending at that point or it's introducing to us a new quote. So Huvehein Erogin, he and they are killed. Vashni Aptura, the other two, the second group of witnesses are exempt. Why are they exempt? Well, they're the ones who actually are causing the individual to be killed because their testimony is being accepted. So obviously these groups were not combined. Maybe they didn't see each other. Maybe they didn't see each other. And so they're not combined. And the result of the law can be brought to its conclusion. Okay, have we seen yet the second quote that Rashi addresses? Okay, no, we have not. No, we have not. Okay, we're going too soon. So now we introduce the next line. Rabbi Yossi Omer. So when you see a name, you want to try to find the word Omer, especially in a Mishnah, because it usually introduces a quote, a statement. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Omer. Le'olam, or forever, or always. Ein neheragin. You don't kill them. Ad until. Sheyehu. That you have. Shnei Edov. Two witnesses, and again, by the way, how do I know that there's a pause after the word Sheyehu? Because there's a star. Star indicates a new phrase from somewhere else in the Talmud. So, Ein Neharagin Ad Sheyehu. They don't get killed until you have Shnei Edov Masrin Bo. Two witnesses warning him. How do I know to stop there? Shneimar, right? Because Shneimar shows us a quote. Al Pi Shnayim Edim. Now, I happen to know that pasuk, but really everyone should look that up. And how do you know where to look it up? Okay, it's in Devarim, good sign. Just look immediately to the left in that first little margin. You see in the column there, it says Devarim Yitzayin. And we know to look there because of the little circle. Okay, so Alpishnaim Edim. Alpishnaim Edim, Yumas Ameis, Lo Yumas Alpi Erechad. That pasuk means that you can only put to death an individual based on Alpi, based on the. The what does P mean? Peyun? The mouth, the word of. Okay, so they're different understandings, and that's what the mission of the Gemara are going to be addressing. But al pi shnai medim, based on two witnesses, yumas ameis, the person can be put to death. Lo yumas al pi edachad, cannot be put to death based on the word of one witness. Okay, now by the way, let's see if we can think like Talmudic rabbis for a moment. I'm going to repeat that pasuk. Al pi shnayim edim, based on the testimony of two witnesses, yumas ameis, you can put the person to death. Lo yumas al pi edachad, he cannot die based on the testimony of one witness. So, what is there a question that can be asked on that pasuk?
Who's determining which of the edim are a good witnesses?
Okay, so that gets into the examination component of how we break down the testimony and figure out if the witnesses are trustworthy.
I got ahead of myself.
Right.
Say the second part again.
Okay, I'm going to say the whole thing in English.
Yes.
Based on the word of two witnesses, you can put the person to death. The person may not be put to death based on the testimony of one witness.
Right.
Anybody? Nobody finds this? I don't mean troubling in a bad way.
Why would you say the second part if you already stated it?
Exactly. Part? Right? If you say two, why do you have to say it can't be done by one? Thank you. I mean, two. If you want to say two or more, you know, so say, Apishnaim Edim, O Shloshaidim Yumasames. I think the Pasuk actually says that. It says, Apishnaim Edim, O Shloshaidim Yumasames. Two or three, and the assumption is or more, but not one. What do you need the one? What do you need? If you say it has to be at least two, so why are you saying not one? Okay, so that's something that the Gemara is going to address. So Biosi says, Olam ein neharagin, they're not killed, Achihu, until you have Shnei the master mode, two witnesses warning him, Shneimar al pi Shnei Medim. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yossi's. And what's the point of the Mishnah telling us Rabbi Yossi's opinion? Anybody? What? Why are we being told about Rabbi Yossi's opinion here? What is he? Is he adding anything here?
He's saying you can't take the witnesses. It's only one
person.
Right. Right. Okay. So he maybe he's clarifying for us.
To derive from his statement.
Right, okay, so exactly. In other words, he's saying we have a rule which has very clearly been established in the Torah, or maybe better, he's giving us a source which the Mishnah up until now did not introduce to us. And then the Mishnah goes off on a slight tangent and says, Davar Acher, and when you see that phrase Davar Acher, you have to know. That's just something you have to know. A Davar Acher means, I'm going to give you another interpretation. I'm going to teach you something else about that same verse. Rashi, by the way, does that all the time in his commentary on the Chumash. Where he'll give you, he'll take a pasuk, and he'll give you comment number one, and then he'll say, Davar Acher, I have another interpretation. What is he changing which pasuk he's talking about? No, he's not even changing which words he's talking about. He says, I have another interpretation on those words. So,
why is he allowed to give you two different interpretations of the same thing? Why can't he make up his own mind and pick one?
And why don't we throw out every commentary on the Chumash except Rashi, yeah, right? Because there's a lot to be learned.
That's what the word is used in the Chumash out of context.
Right. So sometimes there's a lesson to be learned, in which case you can learn many lessons.
Yeah, but I'm saying Rashi himself, mm-hmm, is saying there's two different opinions.
Well, not necessarily. Look, sometimes he's quoting three opinions in the Midrash. Yeah, he's very often like, I mean, just I'll give you one from last week's Parsha. Last week's Parsha is Toldos. We're told that Yitzchak was getting old and his eyes could no longer see. So Rashi tries to explain why he started going blind. So he gives three different interpretations. And the Midrash that he quotes actually gives four interpretations. So I don't remember which ones Rashi quotes. I know one of them has to do with the tears of the angel getting into Yitzchak's eyes at the Akedah. Another one is that he was getting blind so that Yaakov would be able to steal the brachas. Another one is, I know that Rashi says this one, but Oshnon Shel Elu, because immediately before that it mentions how Esav took these wives from the daughters of Chet, and they were a source of tremendous pain and anguish to Yitzchak and Rivka. And so Rashi says Oshnon Shel Elu, the smoke of their idolatry that it was getting, and right, and the question is even asked. No, but that the smoke actually affected his eyes. And so the question is asked, how come Rivka wasn't affected? Because she grew up with it.
It's a different mission.
No, she grew up with it. Right? That's right. It's like somebody who didn't grow up in a smoker's house is really affected by, like, they get near secondhand smoke, whereas somebody who grew up in a smoker's house, I mean, they're affected by it also, but it, they're just used to it. So it's not the same thing. Yeah?
What I don't understand is, why isn't, what does it say about the human element that one witness isn't sufficient?
It's not about the human element that says that one witness isn't sufficient. There's plenty of times, there are plenty of situations when one witness's information is accepted and is utilized and is helpful. But we're talking about a death penalty and a capital punishment. And so the Torah law wants to not just dot every I and cross every T, but be absolutely certain in every single way that the person who is guilty is in fact guilty, and that it's this person, that the person understood the consequences of what they were doing. And in that case, if it becomes a question of he said, she said, or he said, then it's your word against mine. Whereas there's a certain strength which is given to a double ascertaining, two witnesses, versus it's my word against yours.
Right, but you still have a witness. You can have a perpetrator, witness, and a victim. But this says the witness isn't sufficient. No, regardless of the heinous crime, you need two witnesses.
In order to... Right. To do capital punishment.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the Torah law.
That
I mean, look, we can ask questions about anything that's written in the Torah. Yeah. Right. I mean, we're trying to explain it, but that's the Torah law comes from God. God says this is a higher level of security, that everything is correct, as opposed to just one witness alone. So we can try to turn it over as much as we want, but the bottom line is that we're basing all this on a pasuk. It comes from the Torah. So if it comes from the Torah, that's immutable. Okay? So let's just finish our review of the Mishnah, and then we're going to go into the Gemara. So the Davar Acher, Al Pi Shnayim Edim. How do I know that's the end of my... How do I know that's a pause? Al Pi Shnayim Edim. Right, so that actually, that's not as much of an indicator, but yes, that could work as well. But more fundamental, folks... What did the Davar Acher introduce? Davar Acher means I'm going to give you another or interpretation of what?
Of
Al Pi Shnayim Edim. And so what does that mean that the second quote is? It's to use a word that we began with, it's a repeat. Okay, we had Al Pi Shnayim Edim just on the line before. Davar Acher Al Pi Shnayim Edim. It's the same line, same words. So that means pause. There's a punctuation, and then you combine the rest of the words. Shelo Tehe Sanhedrin Shomat Mipi Aturgamon. Okay. So now, what does that mean? What does that mean? Shelo Tehe. Okay. We've seen that phrase before. You shouldn't have Sanhedrin. What's the Sanhedrin? Okay. The High Court. Shomat. What's the root word in Shomat? Right. Shema. To hear. Mipi, that's a word we've had a number of times, from the mouth of Haturgamon, the translator. Okay, look at Rashi. Shelo Tehe Sanhedrin Shamas. Everybody with me? Top left corner of the page, second line. Shelo. Oh, because that's just, it's what's called a Dibur HaMasfil. It's the quote from the Mishnah that Rashi's commenting on. So it's just showing, it's helping us find it easier. And to see what Rashi is addressing from the Mishnah. Shelo Tehe Sanhedrin Shoma'as. Now sometimes, actually some of these Gemaras, this one doesn't have it. Sometimes the period, believe it or not, will be on the top of the line. And when that happens, that's an indicator that you're supposed to read the quote from the Gemara straight along with Rashi. In other words, it's all one sentence combined. Sometimes Rashi gives you the quote, and then he makes his comment on it, and you don't have to read them together. Here you should read them together. Shalot, because this Gemara doesn't show you that the higher period, like I just mentioned. But anyway, Shalot Tehe Sanhedrin Shomas Edus Ha'edim Mipi Haturgamon. Okay, that's all one line. The Sanhedrin should not hear the Edus. What's Edus? Edus is the testimony. Edus Ha'edim. The testimony of the witnesses, mipi haturgamon, from the lips of the translator. Tzrichin hadayanim, the judges need to, sheyehiyu makirin bilashon ha'edim velo. So how do I know that I'm supposed to pause there, folks? Sheyehiyu makirin, or actually, where is the pause? Sheyehiyu Makirin v'lashon ha'edim v'lo sheyamdu mele. It's been, where's the pause in that phrase? In those last eight words of the Rashi. How do you know that? Aside from your knowledge of Hebrew. What's the indicator?
V'lo.
What's v'lo?
And.
And, correct. Vilo indicates a different phrase. Okay, vilo and not. So sheyehu makirim b'lashon ha'edim means that they should recognize the language of the witnesses. Vilo sheyamdu melitz ben osam, and not that they should have a translator between them. Okay, as I'll just remind you from last time. If you come across a word you don't know, so here's melitz, for example. You have to know alphabetical order. That I can't help you with. That you have to just know. But you look up the word melitz, if you, assuming that you don't know it, it's actually a word from the Torah. We're going to read it in a couple of weeks. When Yosef is so you know melitz yosher, right? Okay? From a funeral, of course, the person should be a good advocate. But a melitz is also a translator. And Yosef is talking to his brothers. The Torah says that they didn't know that he was Yosef. Why? Ki ha-melitz ben osam. Because there was a translator between them. Yosef is pretending he doesn't speak Hebrew, and he's speaking whatever Egyptian language, and they don't speak his language, but he understood everything that they said. That's part of the story of the Torah. So here it says melitz, and it actually says, look, it calls it a verb. So that's not a good example. Actually, I take it back.
But the translator is there. Would the translator?
Right, but the point is that well, the truth is that the Sanhedrin's judge, you couldn't be on the Sanhedrin if you didn't speak all the languages.
Now, but all the judges on the Sanhedrin have to know, each one of them have to know all 70 languages?
Yeah. Where do they find these people? Yeah, exactly. They must have gone to some crazy prep school.
Berlitz.
Yeah, what's that?
My grandfather could have been on the Sanhedrin.
Oh, really?
Only five languages.
Only five languages. Rabbi Herzog.
Long way up.
Oh, what's his name? What's here? He said that Rabbi Herzog spoke 12 languages. That's pretty impressive. Okay. All right. Let's take a look at the Gemara now. Okay. All right. So now, what we're going to do is I'm going to show you, as we go through this, how we're going to utilize some of the tools that I gave you in this booklet. Okay. So let's take a look. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Okay?
Where
it says Gimel Mem. Back in the Talmud. Back in the Gemara. Okay? Where you have the big Gimel Mem.
Oh, okay.
Okay, right there. Okay, because we finished the Mishnah, we finished Rashi, now we're going back to the Gemara. So sometimes a person is quoted and they quote somebody else, so you have to be able to figure out what the names are. As you get more versed in the Talmud, you learn to recognize names, and you know how this works. So Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Now, how do I know it's Amar Rav and not the next word? How do I know it's not Amar Rav Minyan?
It doesn't sound right.
Right, it doesn't sound right. Okay, So that's true. Okay, it doesn't sound right. So that's why I said, yeah. If you get used to Gemara language, you know that there is a rabbi whose name was Rav. So you go through this, you say, Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, Amar Rav, so you understand that Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia was quoting Rav, and that the next word is a Gemara word. Okay? Now that Gemara word happens to be Minayin. What is Minayin? Okay, so I'm not going to tell you, I'm going to have you look it up. See? So open your booklet, turn back. It's about, one second, it's on the, it would be, if these pages were numbered, it would be page 8. Okay? So I'm sorry, in the booklet, the numbered page is 74. It's also in alphabetical, well, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's 74. And the other side is 96. So if you have it open, you'll see 74 and 96, it's 74. Okay?
On the bottom.
Okay, anybody want to read it? Okay. It's on the bottom. It says Minayin. Okay? So again, this is from Rabbi Feigenbaum's book, The Understanding of the Talmud Methodology. And this is his explanation of what Minayin means. Go ahead. Read it, please.
Literally, from where? Minayin produces an information question, usually concerning the statement that follows, and generally asking for the Torahic source of that statement. The answer is often introduced by the words Talmud Lomar, meaning that the source is the following biblical verse. Make sure you know whether the verse is itself the source or whether the Gemara must continue with a discussion of the verse in order to turn it into the source.
Okay, so we're going to figure that part out. Okay, that's our challenge right now. Okay? So here's the question. Amarav, minayin. Okay, so it's introducing a question. From where? That's what we just saw in our handy dandy methodology book. Minayin le'e. So where's the next pause going to be, folks? I don't want to give it away. We're learning skills here. Okay, well, so we know that. That we knew. So I'm saying, line. Where's the next one?
The next line. Just before
Shenamar. Okay, just before Shenamar. Very good. Okay, because Shenamar is going to give us a quote. What's the quote from? Go to the Torah or, what does it say there?
Devarim. No.
There's a circle there, after the Shenamar. Okay, what is that word there? Look in the Torah or, what does it say there? I'll give you a hint. It's a two-letter reference. Oh, so the first one is one of those letters that if you don't know Rashi script, you're not going to know. It's a shin. Okay? Shin mem. What does shin mem mean? Shin mem. Shin mem means? It's either shame or? Come on, folks. Hanukkah's coming. Neis gadol haya?
Sham.
Sham. Okay, what does sham mean? There. So what it means is ibid. Right? In footnote, it means look up. Look up. So what's up? Devarim Yitzayim. Okay, so in other words, it's actually the same pasuk. It's actually the same pasuk. Right? Why does it, Gemara, why don't you say Ibid? Well, it does say Ibid. It just says it in Hebrew. Shum, there. Same quote as before. Now, it doesn't always mean it's the same pasuk. It could mean it's the same chapter. That it will always be the same chapter. But if it says Shum, it's the same general source. But as we know from the Torah, or it only quotes us the perek. It doesn't give us the pasuk. You have to look it up. Now again, in the Arts of Gemara, the Torah Or is a little more sophisticated. It gives you the actual Parak and Pasuk, but this is a little more of a traditional, older Gemara.
Where's the Torah Or reference?
Torah Or is that column between, the margin between Rashi and the Gemara.
I see.
Okay, so that we saw the earlier one from the Mishnah was Devarim Yitzayim, and now this one says Shah. Okay, so now let's take a look at that phrase and let's try to finish up the question of Minayin. Amarav, Minayin. Minayin le'edus miyuchedes shehi pesula. That's our phrase. What's edus?
Witness.
No, that's edin. Edus is testimony. Okay? So from where do we know that edus miyuchedes? What's miyuchedes? What's the root in miyuchedes? Okay, so miyuchad or echad?
Unique.
Yes, unique. Okay, that a unique or that comes from? Echad, that comes from one person, Shehi Psula. What's the Shehi? Shehi means that she. What's the she or that it? What's the she or it?
The testimony.
Okay, so right. It's not talking about the witness, because then it would say Shehu. So it's referring to the testimony is Psula. Okay, so how do we know that a unique or an individualized testimony? Bruce, this is your question, right? How do you know that a testimony from one guy is psula? Psul means no good. It's useless. Shenemar, lo yumas al pi edechad. Now, how do I know that edechad, after edechad is the break? Because what I'm supposed to do is look up the pasuk. I look up the pasuk, I find the pasuk, and the quote of the pasuk that's in the Gemara finishes at the word echad, and that quote means lo yumas al pi echad. The person cannot be put to death based on one witness. Okay, now we get to the next word. What's the next word? It's a good question, right? I hope I gave it to you. Should have given it to you. Did I give it to you? No. It's money. Hold on. Oh, did I not give it to you? Oh, I didn't give it to you. I'm a bad guy. Okay. All right. The next word is my. 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 It's the same as the Hebrew word ma. What's the Hebrew word ma?
What?
Okay, my. So the question is, my echad. Now, how do I know that that's where the question ends? First of all, I don't know what the next word means. Okay? Second of all, what is echad? It means one, but more importantly, it's a repeat. We were just given a quote from a pasuk, in which the pasuk says, "Lo yumas, you don't put to death al pi eid echad," based on the testimony of echad, of one. So the Gemara immediately asks the question, "My Echad. What do you mean when you say Echad? Okay, so now we get to the next word, Ilema. So now I know that I gave you that one. Ilema. Okay, we're probably going to have to stop here. We're going to stop with Ilema. Because Ilema is actually a very big entry here. Take a look on the bottom, page 15. Okay, and it goes on to the next page, which is page 16. Okay, so Ilema is big. It's a big word, and we're going to stop with Ilema here. But essentially, it's going to introduce an answer to either an attack or an information question, which was proposed rhetorically. So, okay, knowing that it can be refuted. So, in other words, what was the question here? My Echad. What do you think the question is? If the Gemara is saying, you just said, you can't put somebody to death based on the testimony of one witness. So then the Gemara asks the question, what is one? So Ilema is going to start giving us possibilities. If you're going to say that one means one witness, well, I already know that from the verse. We already discussed this. So rather, what is one? What does it mean, one? That if you somehow have a situation where you have two, but they saw the testimony one by one, this is what the Gemara's answer is going to be. What we're going to do next week is we're going to work it out in the language. Okay? So like, let's say, for example, there's a small window. Okay? I'm looking through this window, and I see what's going on. Okay? I see it. And then the next guy comes along, and he takes a look, and he sees what's going on. So what the Gemara is going to tell us is that that type of, with the point of Al-Pi Eid Echad, that you can't do it based on one, is if, yeah, there might be two, but if they didn't see it at the same time, even though they're both there, then they didn't, you know, then it doesn't work. Okay, so that's just the conclusion. I didn't want to leave you hanging that much. But we're going to start next week with Ilema. Oh, sorry, right, next time. Right, next week I'm not going to be here. Okay, we're going to start with that. We're going to start with Ilema because we have to work through and see Ilema. You see Ilema in the Gemara all the time. So it's a very important concept to understand. So we'll start with that methodology page next time we meet. Okay, have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And we'll see you then.